Hi, this is Sarah.
And Chris.
We're just getting ready for a time of wonder.
Excitement.
And discovery.
Welcome to...
the unofficial Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Jacob wrestled the angel.
We're so easy to please.
Good with pork chops, by the way.
Really?
Applesauce.
Thank you. How did you find it?
But I don't remember where.
Ah!
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 33 of the unofficial Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Happy Easter!
Happy Easter, everyone!
This is my first year not at home, and I'm not going to get an Easter basket, and I'm really sad. Okay, I'm good now. And yes, I know that's not the reason for the season and all that. I'm on a chocolate kick right now, that's all.
Indeed. And with that, I'm just trying to figure out how to segue from that.
He is risen!
He is risen indeed.
Yay! Do you have any plans for Easter?
I'm co-leading worship on Sunday.
Cool.
That will be good.
Yep, I'm hopefully not going to be stuck in my room. I'm hopefully going to spend Easter with my mentor and her family. We'll see.
Very nice, So, just some stuff to get out of the way. Last week we threw out the call for emails in regards to the whole African Americans owning property in early U.S. history. And Sarah happened to do some extensive research on it.
Read Lizzie's letter first, then I...
Okay, well, let's read Lizzie's letter first, then.
Lizzie G. sent us a letter.
Lizzie G. from the Chant of Odyssey sent us this awesome email in regards to this issue. And she said, I have to say, when you guys started talking about the authenticity of African Americans owning property before the Civil War, I knew I would be emailing you. I've actually just changed my major to history, and I'm taking a class on African American history. I'm not an authority by any means, but I do know that African Americans' experiences in early North America were characterized by diversity, and that some did in fact own property. One example would be Anthony Johnson, who came to America as a slave in the 1600s, gained his freedom, and later acquired 250 acres of tobacco land. His descendants owned land too, and though some generations later the family became tenant farmers, this was due to laws that started defining slavery as based on race in the 1660s, which made it more difficult for black people to pass on land to their children or to live independent of whites. I haven't read anything about a nationwide law prohibiting African Americans from owning property, though there very well could have been local and statewide efforts to do so. However, there were free blacks in all regions of the United States up until the Civil War, and while it was by no means easy for them to make a living, I'm sure some did own land. I do know that in the antebellum South, there were a few black plantation owners who had slaves. True, these instances were rare, especially in the South. But they did exist. Their legal status was certainly ambiguous, and citizenship rights and the right to vote were not granted until the passage of 13th and 14th Amendments after the Civil War. But some African Americans did own land, and not all of them lived impoverished lives. So, thank you, Lizzie, for clarifying that for us.
Okay, here's a shock, everybody. I actually did a little bit of research, too, on this. That's not the shock part. The shocking part is, I made a post on the blog!
Wow.
Yes, I was inspired to look this up. I was actually re-listening to the episode, I listened to the podcast, I think. And I was really irritated by the fact that I couldn't figure this out, and so I decided to do some research online, and I actually found mention of Anthony Johnson, whom Lizzie G. Referred to. And she actually had a lot more research than I was able to find in my short looking. But I found a timeline of African-American history from like 1400s on to current. It was pretty cool. It's at blackpast.org. And Yeah, basically she said everything that I said in here, but it still poses questions of whether, yes, I understand that African Americans own property, but were they actually pioneers? That's kind of more what I was, that's the, one of the questions I had was left with at the end. And yeah, you should go check out our blog at aofanpodcast.blogspot.com to see me actually posting there, because usually Chris does that, and hey, this is like only the second time that I've ever posted on it. So yeah, go check it out.
Speaking of history, this was a monumental moment in history when
I know,
Sarah posted a blog.
weren't you just shocked?
I was. I opened the blog and I saw this post and I nearly fell out of my chair.
Really?
Well, maybe that's being a bit overdramatic, but it was pretty close.
Wow. I should do this. No, I won't do it more often because then I won't get that kind of reaction. But okay, so anything else we need to clear up? Oh, wait, I have one more letter that I'd like to share with people since we're on the subject of reading letters to people or from people. This is from I'm gonna call her Woohoo for Wooten because that's her TOO screen name, although she gave me her real name, but I don't know what she wants me to use it or not. So this was sent to me on the Town of Odyssey, and it says, "Hi there. I wanted to let you know that I love your podcast. I found them on iTunes a few months ago and just finished catching up on all the episodes today. It's nice to know that my nerdy obsession with Odyssey is shared by many people. Let's see. I just joined the TO and I'm trying to navigate my way around the boards and such, and I hear from the podcast that you're in college, right?" She goes on to say where she goes to college, and I won't share that for confidentiality. And she also grew up on Odyssey. It's so neat to look back on my childhood, adolescence, and even today and realize how God directly impacted my life through AAO. I feel like these characters are members of my family. So do I, wooing, woohoo for Wooten. I wanted to share one thing I noticed when listening to my AAO cassette tapes at home last week. Eugene seems to have an affinity for rhododendron bushes. There are two episodes that I can think of where Eugene hides or falls into this type of bush. One is where he and Bernard are hiding in one in a more recent episode, but I can't remember the title. Chris, do you remember what title Eugene, what episode Eugene and Bernard were hiding in a rhododendron bush?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, well, we'll look that up and we'll get back to you on that one, waiting for Wooten. And then the other one is in Isaac the Benevolent, where Eugene falls into the bush when he swerves his bike into Miss Isaac. He comments, "I rode it under the bush of the Heath family, I believe." And thanks for putting time and effort into creating these podcasts. I really enjoy both you and Chris. My favorite episodes, though, have been the ones interviewing the producers and actors, especially the saga with David Griffin. He and I have very similar sense of humor, so it's cracking up the entire time. And yes, I am jealous that you, Sarah, were insulted by him. P.S. Maybe it's because Chris is Canadian, but can you tell him he pronounces the word saga like the word Sega? Whenever he says it, I think of the gaming system.
Sega.
Oh, Chris. I'm glad I'm not the only one that noticed that.
Me
See,
and
that
my
was.
weird Canadian pronunciations.
Yeah, pretty much. So now that we know that you do this, and I'm not the only one that thinks so, you need to start saying it the right way.
Saga and drama and what else?
I don't know. I'll think of something else. Anyway, alrighty. So, any other unfinished business we need to take care of?
No, that's pretty much it. Thank you very much, Woohoo for Wooten, for sending that to us.
I think that we should switch things up a bit and give our clue out now.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So that way they'll be forced to find it and listen to the actual podcast
Keep
instead of just sitting to the end.
our listeners on their toes.
Exactly.
So, the word is Tasha.
Speaking of Tasha, let's get right onto that episode review.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, Tasha's back! Ah!
Yeah, it was good to have Tasha back. We haven't heard from her in forever.
Since the search for Wit, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, when I was listening to this, I spent the entire episode literally trying to figure out if it was the same voice or if it was a new voice. Because when I first heard it, it sounded off, but she said everything exactly the right way. Like, she paused at the right time. She pronounced words the exact same way. Her enunciation was exactly the same. The voice, like, the inflections of her words, exactly the same. When, and she would, like, even, she'd get through half a phrase and her voice would change and it would kind of sound like the original Tasha. And then it wouldn't sound like her. And so I spent the entire episode trying to figure out if it's possible for an adult's voice to randomly change like that much. Because it sounded like it. That pretty much drove me nuts the entire show. I had to listen to it 2 more times before I actually caught what was actually going on, because I was so focused on trying to figure out if it was Tasha, was the same actress or not. Yeah. It's not the same actress, but I have to say that, in my opinion, this is probably one of the best, if not the best, recasting jobs that Odyssey has ever done.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think for me, I wasn't zeroing in on Tasha as much. She had her character spot on, and it was just one of those things where, oh, okay, Tasha's back, great. And I was just enjoying the episode and listening to everything play out. But no, she did a great job.
I wouldn't have noticed either, except that, like, okay, when you get a new actor, you notice, you expect there to be differences in how they talk, or, like, the way they say their words, or how they pause, or different things like that. So you, for me, at least, I expect it, so I'm not paying that close attention to how they're different. But, so that's, I didn't know that, first of all, I didn't know there was going to be a different actress for Tasha. And so when there was, I just kind of wasn't paying attention. But then suddenly, she was saying, like, phrases that she said in the past, and she was doing them exactly the same way. And I was like, and so it caught my attention, so I started focusing on that, and like, I was like, now, then I started second guessing if this was a different voice or not, because it was so spot on that I could not figure it out, and it was driving me absolutely crazy, which I have mentioned several times now, but it really was driving me nuts. And yeah, I mean, when you have a new actress, you expect them to be different. You don't expect them to be the same. It's like this actress was either just knew the character so well, like she studied it or something, because I just got done listening to, like, Search for Wit and all the Tasha episodes, and it shocked me how close this actress delivered these lines.
Right.
Yeah. And to the point of distraction.
And she also had the character down, too, because another thing that you're always watching out for, and it's not something that you notice until it's not there, is do they talk like their original character? Going back to what we mentioned, I don't know if I remember if it was the last podcast or 2 podcasts ago when we talked briefly about Bart and also about Katrina, and seeing how their characters and how Katrina kind of lost her kind of her quirkiness, her intellectual side when she was replaced by Audrey Wozniacki.
Right.
But on the other hand, Bart, for the most part, had his line spot on, and I think you could say the same with Tasha. The lines that
yeah.
she had delivered were exactly how I remembered her. So.
Yeah. Odyssey, great, absolutely brilliant casting job.
And we have to give props to Paul McCusker for writing this, of course.
He did? Okay, yeah. I didn't even pay attention. I was, like, I was so focused on hearing who in the world was this actress? Was it the same person? I did listen to it several times after that to try and get my mind off it, but I was so wowed by Tasha's performance that it just, everything else faded, I'm sorry.
Because if there's anyone who knows Tasha's character, it's Paul McCusker. So.
Awesome job, Mr. McCusker, awesome job.
Yep. Well, speaking of characters, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm finding Connie's character, she's kind of, it's her, but she's getting annoying now. She does overreact, and she is overdramatic.
Connie has always been that way, Chris.
No, I realize that, but the thing with her is that she always expects to be told everything, even when it's something that she's not supposed to know. She's like, Jason, how could you not have told me that you were a secret agent?
Well, Eugene knew.
But under different circumstances, though.
Well, you figure if they trust Eugene, they would trust Connie. I'm sorry, I kind of relate to Connie in this, so...
Yeah, you're not the best person to vent this out to.
I'm not that nosy, I promise. If it's not my
No, just because you're so much like Connie. Maybe
right.
not in the nosiness sense, but just in her personality type. So you can relate to her a lot better than I can. But,
although, you really do need to... picture it this way. This is your boss. You've worked for him for 20 years. Well, okay, Jason, for 10, 15, something like that. You have a good relationship with him, you're friends outside of work, and then some punk kid who was in jail and now has a gossip column writes on his blog to the whole world that this your boss is a secret agent and
okay.
you didn't even know
and,
that,
and that's
that
another
would tick
thing.
Me off.
That's another thing. How did Rusty find out?
There was a secret informant. They said the voice, the bad guy kind of said something about the, letting the source know, blah, 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 blah.
Okay, I definitely did not catch that because I was under the impression that the Whisperer didn't know who the agent was until he found out that Rusty had blobbed his name.
I think I could be wrong, but I think he said something about letting the informant know.
Okay, because then that's another storyline quirk then. Because then the fact that Rusty released this information was irrelevant to the Whisperer wanting to get back at Jason. Because he didn't have to use Rusty's information if he knew that already, right?
Wait, try that again, because I completely don't understand what you're asking me.
The premise of the episode, the premise of the secrecy, was so that the Whisperer would not be able to track down the person who put him in jail, right? If he knew already before Rusty blobbed, if he was the source of Rusty's blog, then why would he have waited all this time?
Because he was in jail?
No, but he's not in jail, though.
No, he's not now, but he was for so long. That's why he didn't know that applesauce doesn't exist. He just got out of jail and is planning this great, elaborate revenge scheme to get back at Jason Whittaker. But he didn't know where Jason Whittaker was until Rusty posted it on his blog.
But you just said that he was the source, though, who told Rusty.
I didn't
Rusty.
Say that. I said there was an informant that let Rusty know, but I don't know if they're the same person or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to know how Rusty went from having a ginormous book... Or no, from he went from being one story, a short story in a book of collective works, to having his own book,
blog.
To now having his own website and blog.
Well,
this thing just keeps expanding.
He has a
and
blog.
Expanding.
We don't know about a website, but we do know about a blog. And that's another thing. I really like how they're incorporating modern technology now into their references. I mean, they're talking about Connie's browsing the web, checking sites and blogs. Next, they're going to mention YouTube.
I think they'd have to pay rights for that.
Yeah.
But, do we have to pay rights for that? Okay, no, seriously. So is your vent about Connie over? Did I make my point decently enough?
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I'm just one
you
of those things.
It's just
one of those things.
It's not that she doesn't want everything. It's just, you know, it'd be nice to know if a close friend... You'd rather find out from that close friend than some punk kid who, you know, you used to serve ice cream to and kick out of your place of business... You know,
I can understand her frustration. The fact that she expected Jason to tell her, that I found was a bit unreasonable. But
well, as opposed to telling Rusty Gordon.
Well, that's just it. He didn't tell Rusty Gordon.
Right.
Not like Jason said, "Hey, Rusty, I'm Agent 2362." No.
Okay.
All right.
Question. When did Jason actually go back to working at the agency? Because I totally did not remember that
Jason...
happening.
I don't know if it was a renewal or something like that, but he got it back in the top floor. Part one of the top floor.
I thought that was just like him like doing getting a few favors. I didn't realize he was actually back.
Nope, he was completely back. Yeah. Cuz that he to get your pass or whatever he had to be a full-fledged agent, I think.
Did it say that?
Somewhere in the episode. Yeah, near the beginning, I'm pretty sure.
Oh. I thought it was just a temporary thing so he could do this. Or do the top floor thing. If he, okay. I need to go listen to that again, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the agency, did you catch the Jacob wrestled an angel thing?
Yes.
I'm positive I've heard that before, but I don't remember where. Jacob wrestled the angel.
Well, obviously it's biblical, but did you mean outside of that?
Outside of that. I'm positive that's been mentioned in... an Odyssey episode before, and I don't know if that was a reference to a particular scene or if they just used that as, like they said, okay, let's pull this from an episode and use that as a secret code. I remember one scene where someone wants to know about whether Jacob wrestled...
trying to explain it in an episode where Wade is out of town.
Right, yeah.
Is that what you were thinking of?
I think so.
Okay, hold on. That is... what is that episode?
Okay, the episode... Okay. The episode that we are desperately looking for is Let This Mind Be In You.
Thank you! How did you find it?
I looked it up on the soda fountain.
Okay, no wonder I couldn't find it. Alright, okay, moving on. So, Shepherd and the Giant, or not Shepherd and the Giant, sorry. Jacob wrestles the angel. And so it comes up twice because it was an agency thing. and because Tasha has an exchange with him about it later on.
Yep. So, I mean, who knows if that was an intentional reference, but...
Yeah, but why would that? What would that have to do with Let This Mind Be In You?
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with it, but they just use that, I don't know, that line, Jacob wrestled the angel, and stuck it in here. Like, it didn't have to be anything, because remember, it's secret code, so they could have said anything.
Right, that's true.
So, anyway, talk a little bit about Carson and Grady. What did you think of their appearance in this episode?
That was kind of cool, and I thought it was neat that Carson was trying to be a dad, and they were going fishing together, and even though Carson can't fish, he wanted to do something with his son. Making up for last time, I thought it was cool.
Yeah, that was good. Good way to incorporate them into the show. I did think that, or the scene where Jason and Grady got shot by the battleship Stingers, and Grady said, I don't feel very good, Jason. That line was perfectly executed, and it kind of reminded me of The Last Great Adventure of the Summer, where mm-hmm. Terry and his dad got drugged in the train car while running away from Nigel.
Yep.
So, that was kind of neat.
I need to make one more complaint. I really do like this episode, just for the record, but bad guy, first scene, really, really corny.
Now, are you talking about you mentioned the first scene. Is that what you're concerned about, or just bad character overall?
Well, I'm not going to judge the character until we find out more about him, but the first scene was really, really corny.
Hmm.
With the whole obviously he's known as the Whisperer, and we know that now, but at first it was kind of okay. I feel like I'm watching a really, really bad Batman movie or something.
Well, I mean, my initial impression was it sounds like a cartoon character.
Yeah.
It really did. It sounded like something, I don't know, from, and we played the Gadget.
Yep.
Theme a couple of weeks ago, and it kind of reminded me of one of those kind of villains.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a Joker kind of villain.
Yeah.
With his evil laugh, or attempts at laughing anyway.
Which amused me. That did amuse me.
That did, actually, surprisingly.
I laughed. Yay! But, what was it? I'm going to give him a chance, though. I'm not going to be too picky. I just thought that I would throw that out there. It was kind of one of those, huh? I mean, come on. We had Maxime and the Man in Black and Blackguard and Bennett Charles and all these really strong, strong bad guys. And then
yeah.
We have a very cartoony bad guy.
Well, you know, back in our interview with Marshall and Nathan, they did mention that there would be a comedic villain in the season. And I'd say this guy fits the billing pretty well.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
My initial reaction was that the Whisperer was not sinister enough. You mentioned Blackguard. He wasn't manipulative like Blackguard was, or nearly as conniving as Bennett Charles. So when I first heard this episode, I thought, this guy really is quite underwhelming as a villain. But I re-listened to the episode, and what happens when I hear them again is I generally get a better overall perspective on things. Because when you hear things for the first time, it's really easy to overreact and see things from a very short-sighted viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I began to realize was, or think to myself, was, do we really need another evil, manipulative villain?
Nope.
Honestly, I'm willing to give the writers some slack here.
Me
because
too.
They know when to include villains and the personalities that those villains need to have for the given situation. If you look at the last couple of seasons with the obvious antagonist was Dalton Kern, right?
Right.
Now, he was more of a physically dominant villain, playing against the passive and the really soft character, the cowardly character that Leonard was. And this episode, you had Jason, right? So the guy to play antagonist to our hero of sorts had to be someone who could respond to Jason's quips, because he's a very sarcastic character. So anyways, Jason needed that comedic character to play off of him. So I thought that, my first thoughts were, I don't know about this guy, but I'm willing to give it some time. We'll see how he turns out in the next episode, and Who knows? He could be a pretty decent villain. Okay, we can't talk about The Whisper without mentioning perhaps one of the biggest references, which was applesauce.
Yay!
Good with pork chops, by the way. What did you think?
That was interesting to have that brought back.
Yeah, totally.
Thought that was cool. And yeah, I'm pretty... Didn't Wit destroy applesauce?
I think so.
And, well, except it was brought up again in Exit.
Right, but that was a password.
But, no, it wasn't.
People get confused over Exit. They think that, oh, he loaded applesauce into the machine. He didn't load applesauce. He typed in applesauce. That doesn't mean he loaded the program. Or maybe that's just my perspective, and I'm completely wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you are, because how else was the Imagination Station destroyed?
Because he had an auto-destruct feature, and the password to do that was applesauce. That's how I viewed it. I didn't think he loaded the program, because he obviously erased it, and that's what you just erased. So
when did he erase it?
Wit erased applesauce in the battle part 2.
Oh, that's right. Okay, well then I guess... Okay, then just being a password makes sense and goes along with Wit's whole weird sense of humor and...
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Alright, never mind then.
Do you kind of think that applesauce is like Dr. Blackguard? Because you love hearing the reference, but at the same time it's somewhat overused. Maybe that's just
me,
but...
It's overused?
You don't? Okay. Because I know some people have made complaints about the fact that, oh, Dr. Blackguard's always coming back, it was more in the, which episode was it?
Blackguard's Revenge?
It was Blackguard's Revenge, yeah. It was, people were complaining...
I liked that episode,
thank
you.
About the fact
you.
That he returned from the dead of sorts. I mean, I love that episode. That was probably one of my favorite Blackguard episodes, to be honest. But, I think you could say, and by the preview we heard for the next episode, Jason seems to be willing to give up the program because supposedly it's an old one and it's still available. Maybe the government has a copy of it that's been archived for future use. Who knows?
Does the government ever get rid of... Oh, wait, you're Canadian. The U.S. government does not get rid of anything, ever.
Right. No, I'm just saying we don't know that because Wit supposedly erased it and we don't know who had the original copy.
Well, but he was only one of many people that were working on it. Remember, he mentioned that in the very early episodes of Apple, like when
right.
Apple Lost was going on. So,
well, I mean,
other versions of it may have existed.
It's kind of like anything we talk about in this review. It's hard to give anything a fair critique until we hear part 2. But it's
for the record, I suggested waiting to have two. To record both in one.
But at the same time, though, it's always fun, you know, giving our thoughts now, and then once it comes out, we can look back on it and say, hey, we were bang on with that, or we were way off with that. So, just nice to, speaking of archiving...
We can't let people know that we're wrong on things.
You can't?
No.
Oh, I didn't know that. We'll damage our reputation.
I know.
Moving on, let's see, what else was there in this episode? Oh yeah, when the Whisperer asked Jason what his cane could do, or Fenwick used his cane as a blow dart weapon of sorts.
Yep, I got that too.
But I was glad it turned out to be a taser, which of course references back to Darkness Before Dawn, when Richard used one on jellyfish, and then later Dr. Blackguard on Richard. So,
actually, cool. If you think about it, a taser and a blow dart aren't really that much different because both throw pointy things that stick on you until you pull them out.
Right.
And they both paralyze your body for a period of time. Yep.
Absolutely. So that was a nice little reference there to the two episodes, or two scenes.
Yay! I think we're finding references in places they don't actually exist, to be honest.
No, I think that was intentional.
Oh, and for all of you who are complaining about not getting to hear about Wit's End last week, there was definitely... They continued that storyline and told us that Wit's End was closed for repairs, remember? Relax, be patient. They will not drop a storyline that they pick up, at least not in the 50th season. They haven't so far. We can trust them in the future. Right, guys?
Absolutely.
Right. Give them a little more credit.
No, but that's just the thing. When you listen to an episode, you're always... looking at things in that one moment, you're like, they didn't talk about this, or, oh, I don't like that. But when you step back, listen to it again, see the big picture, you'll get it.
I feel like I've been overly negative on this episode, but I really did like it. No, I wasn't overly negative. I went on for about 5 minutes straight about how awesome Tasha was. Okay. And how awesomely her lines were written. Did I mention that too?
No, I don't think you did.
Okay. I'm adding that in there.
No, I'm pretty sure you did.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Oh yeah, it's tough to give a comprehensive review on an episode that's not, or on a show that's not complete yet, but hey, that's how it goes. So, final rating for this episode.
A 6. Actually, I'll say a 5, depending on how it next one turns out. Then I will make it better in hindsight if I need to.
Yeah, I'm gonna say the same. I'm gonna say 5 out of 5 stars.
Yay! We're so easy to please.
We are.
Oh, man.
All right, so what's coming up in the next couple weeks here?
I have no idea.
Well, we have, obviously, part 2 of Accidental Dilemma,
Yay!
airing on officially March 29th, but hopefully it'll air on the Tuesday, which is the 25th. Yeah, so, and then April 5th, we'll have a class reenactment. And also, in our review of a class reenactment, so that's 2 podcasts from now, we will be revealing the prize for our season-long contest. Finally revealing what it is. We know you're all on pins and needles, just waiting to find out what it is.
It's something that I think everyone is going to like immensely.
Yes. You won't want to miss out.
All right, Chris, shall we wrap this up?
We shall. All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and keep on sending us your emails, your letters. We love hearing from you, and of course, we will endeavor to answer as many questions as we can within reason.
Within reason. Yep, thanks everybody, and have a great Easter.
Is a